Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We will be beginning our shiur 16 lines from the top of Daf Samach Beis. You will notice a bracketed section of Gemara, and with that's accompanied by a bracket length indicator, the vertical dash dotted line running down, in this case, the right-hand side of the Gemara text. We spent quite a bit of time during our previous shiur, the shiur for Daf Samach Aleph, in introducing this Gemara as well, and the reason for having done that is because the sugya that started on Daf Samach Aleph continues through till Samach Beis Amid Beis. So in order to gain maximum benefit of today's shiur, it's very important to be familiar with that which we discussed during our last shiur. We don't want to be repetitive so as not to tax the patience of those who are already familiar. We noted in our last shiur that the bracketed section was going to go back to explain details in the Tanaic source in the Braisa that was quoted on Samach Aleph Omid Beis, and after the bracketed section, the Gemara will then return to Rav Chisda and challenge the answer that we had given in our last shiur, where Rav Chisda said that we will apply the ho'il concept if it results in a stringency, as it in fact did in the case of someone who shechted the Korban Pesach, having in mind during the Shechita to have appointed people that were mulim to eat from it, with the intent that the Zrifas Adam would be done for non-minuyin arelim, people that were arel, but they were not appointed to the sacrifice. And Rav Chisda had ruled that since they could, in potential, they could circumcise themselves, they become what we referred to in our previous years, chavero dumio didei. But till we get to the question on Rav Chisda, we now turn our attention to the bracketed section, and the note on the side, which we read in our last year, explains what we've said so far as the brackets. So now we go right into the Gemara. Omar le mar zutra brei derav mori leravina. Kotoni, it's said in the source on Samach Aleph Amid Beis, and since we have a new marking, we have to refer to our Nosei Mivneh heading. The topic heading and structural note features a house form, and the house introduces, as you scan down the Gemara, Gimel Bavos, its three sections, Shel HaBraisa, Shemuva Liel on Samach Aleph, the Braisa that we had quoted back on Samach Aleph Omid Beis, HaGemara Mevareres Be'ez Tuma Medubar. The Gemara will be focusing on what kind of Tuma is referred to in the Braisa. Braisa made reference to, there was an attempt to compare Arlus to Tuma, and in that context, we want to understand what kind of Tuma was being referred to. So in the course of this Omid, three sections of that Braisa will be cited. Is it a reference to, number one, Tumas Bosar, where the meat of the sacrifice became defiled, O Tumas Gavri, or people, the people who were bringing the carbon had become tome. Triangles will appear as we go down the Omid. This we recall Sikum Beinayim, in other words, conclusions as to what kind of Tuma are spoken about in each section. So they're interim conclusions. But we have to then get a general picture of, after all is said and done, we're talking about one Tanaic source. So We want to see, is there consistency in the source that it's talking about one kind of tumah throughout the source or not? Standard procedure is we like to have our Tanaic sources have consistent examples as you go through them. Another marking that will appear is the double underline used to highlight the expressions Ilem or Ela, which represents Shlavei Biur. These are stages in clarification. In other words, that after each section of the Brice is quoted, we're going to want to know, well, what kind of Tuma is featured in that section. So the Gemara will say, Ilem, or if you suggest this and this, well, you'll find that that is problematic. Ela, but rather, so say this and this, and we will see as it goes on. Hopefully, this will become much clearer as we go through the Gemara. So we've painted a picture, an overall picture. The Braisa from Samach Amud Beis will be broken down into several parts, and we're trying to understand what type of Tumah was being referred to in the source. So Marzutra says to Ravina, Kotoni, it's said in the source, and we have a little arrow pointing you back to Samach Aleph and Beis. You can see where this is quoted if you go back there and see the corresponding arrow indicating Samach Beis Omer Aleph. So the Gemara says, quotes the source, Hoyol v'orlo poiseles v'tuma poiseles, since orlo, which is a case of lo nimo, people that were uncircumcised, if you had them in mind during the Shechita, so it ruins the korban. V'tumah poiseles, and likewise, if you had in mind people that were tomei while you were slaughtering the korban, because the korban pesach, as we said, is a korban that must be eaten, so that if you have in mind people that cannot eat it, that ruins the korban. And we continue, ma tumah lo osa ba miksas tumah kechol tumah, just like in the case of tumah, we do not treat as a psul, as a nullification or rejection of the korban if you have a mixed mindset. Miksas tumah means you had in mind people that, some of the people in the group that you had in mind were tahor and some were tomei, so it's still kosher. So we don't make miksas tumah kechol tumah, as opposed to a case where your mindset is exclusively on a group of tomei people that would ruin the korban. So af orla, so too with regard to the original question that the source was dealing with, what's the story with having in mind a group of people that some of them are uncircumcised. So we want to say af orla lo osa miksas orla kechol orla. So we're paralleling, as the source did, the rules of Orla to the known rules of Tumah. There is one assumption that is being made over here, and that is that the rules of Tumah are given, and the rules of Orla are not clear. And we're trying to derive the rules of Orla, which is supposedly not clear, from the rules of Tumah, which are supposedly clear. That itself will be an issue. Why are you so sure about the rules of Tumah and you're not so sure about the rules of Orla that you have to seek out what are the rules of Orla? So now let's continue. Hai Tumah Hechi Domi, the type of Tumah that the source is referring to, what do you mean? Ilema, when you see Ilema, it's an expression that ultimately will be rejected. So Ilema Bitumas Gavri, that people, men, who were appointed to the korban were tomei, and they have tomei with tohar people. If you say that that's what the source is really talking about, umai lo osa bo miktsas tuma kechol tuma, this phrase that appeared in the source, what does that mean? And just to help you find where that quote is coming from, so we provide a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. So what does that mean when we say that the halacha does not make partial tumah like complete tumah? De'i iko arbo'o v'chamisho gavri temein v'arbo'o v'chamisho gavri tahorin lo pasli luhu temein la tahorim, that if you have four or five people that are tomei, four or five people that are tor, so you have a group that measure that numbers 8 to 10 people. Part of the group tomei, the part of the people tomei, part of the people, some of the people are tor. we say lo pasli lu. It doesn't ruin the korban. The fact that you have tameim, the tameim there do not pasl the tahorim. They don't ruin the korban for the tahorim. Well, gabi orlo nami ha lo pasli. Regarding the issue of orlo, the arelim don't ruin the korban for the mulim, for the circumcised ones. Disnan, we have a mishnah that says la mulim ula or la arelim kosher. If you have a dual group in mind, then the korban is okay. My shno tumo de pshito le u my shno orlo de mesafka le. As far as our tana is concerned, what makes it such that the rules of tuma are simple or obvious, and that the rules of Arlus are not so obvious? In other words, mixed Tomei Torah is obvious, mixed Mulim Arelim is not so obvious that you have to be asking about them. The rules of Mulim Arelim is also obvious. And yet the source is trying to derive the rules of Orla from the rules of Tuma. Why is that necessary? Elo, Betumas Bosor. Rather, the issue concerns the tuma that defiled the meat. Umay lo also mixes tuma kichol tuma. What is that phrase then going to mean? And again, we have a little star just to tie this into the original source where you can see that quote from. What is that phrase going to mean now in the context of the meat? The ilu itmi chad me'evorim. If one of the limbs of the sacrifice became tome, hai di itmi sarfinon lei, the idoch achlinon lei. That which became tome is burnt, and that which is not tome, you eat. Well, that is obvious. So we want to then take that characteristic of tuma, namely where you have only mixas tuma, the rest that's not tome is still okay, and say the same thing about a group of people that you had in mind, some of whom were Arelim, some of whom were Tahorim, and we say, that means Mulim, and we say that those who were Arelim don't affect those that are Mulim, that are circumcised. B'mai ukimta. So how have we set up the Resha, the first installment of the source? B'tumas Basar. That's what we've concluded, and we say the triangle represents the interim conclusion. Well, Amos Sefer. Let's continue with the same source. What else does it say in the source? It had said the following: Donin davar she'eno noheg b'chol hazvachim, mi davar she'eno noheg b'chol hazvachim. Let us conclude the issue of the orla, where you have part of the group of arelim. Let us derive or conclude that from based on the fact that the orla issue is something that's eino noeg b'chol hazvachim. It doesn't apply to other sacrifices. It's something that's unique to the Korban Pesach. Mi davar she'eino noeg b'chol hazvachim, from the rules of Tuma, which don't apply to all other sacrifices. V'al yochiach zman she'noeg b'chol hazvachim. This was again a quote from the source. Hopefully you're familiar with our previous shir, so that we're assuming you're familiar with all that, and the source is then saying that as far as our lack of clarity regarding Orla, let us get clarity from comparing Orla to the rules of Tuma, as opposed to comparing the rules of Orla, the rules of the uncircumcised as part of a group, from what we know concerning the issue of Zman. Zman had to do with we call Pigel, slaughtering Korban with the wrong time intention. So now, in this installment, reference again was made to Tuma. Umay Tuma. What Tuma is, when we say here, let us learn the rules of Orla, which applies to all Zvachim, which does not apply to all Zvachim, from Tuma. It doesn't say, actually, the word Tuma isn't spelled out here, but we wrote it in above the line. You can see the second word in the line, mi dover sheno noeg, the word above that, that's a reference to Tuma. So what Tuma is referred to here? Umay Tuma, inemo tumas bosar. If you think it's a reference to, like we said before, the Tuma of the meat, where the meat of the sacrifice became tome, amay eno noeg b'chol hazvachim. What is what is such about tumah of tumas basar that doesn't apply to all sacrifices? All sacrifices whose meat became defiled, you cannot eat them. They're sent out to be burnt. There's nothing special about the Korban Pesach as opposed to other sacrifices. So the description of tumah as a dover she'eino noeg b'chol hazvachim simply is untrue if you're talking about tumah of the meat. Ela pshita b'tumas gavri, rather, it's talking about where the people who were appointed to the Korban Pesach became tamei, or let's just say people tumah, where the people became tamei. Umay eino noeg b'chol hazvachim. What is unique to Tumas Gavri that we say it doesn't apply to all korbanos. The ilu b'chol hazvachim orel v'tomei mishalchen korbanoseim. We put the word orel in brackets simply to de-emphasize it because we're focusing right now on the issue of tumah. But this applies to Arelis as well, which is important for the Brisa where Arelis was being learned from tumah. So what do we say about Tumas Gavri? The ilu b'chol hazvachim, I'm reading again, the ilu b'chol hazvachim orel v'tomei mishalchin korbanoseihen. A person who is orel or is tomei and he has a korban obligation, so he can send it to the Beis HaMikdash for processing and he'll fulfill his korban obligation even though he is not actually there and even though he is not actually eating from it. The ilu b'pesach, when it comes to the korban pesach, Orel v'tomei ein mishalchin pischehem. The person who is Orel or he's Tomei, person who is Tomei doesn't send his Korban Pesach. In fact, the Torah has an entire Pasha, which we call the Pasha Pesach Sheni, that applies for people who are Tomei. They wait till the 14th of the next month of Iyar to have their Korbanos done. So there's no sending in of Korbanos to have it processed if the owner is Orel or Tomei. So at this point, the description of tumah as dover she'eino noeg b'chol hazvachim is characteristic of tumas gavri. Well, that's as far as this second installment of the source. What about the first installment of the very same Tanaic source? We concluded, where you see the triangle, we concluded that the Reisha was talking about Tumas Bosar. So the Gemara is perplexed. Reisha b'Tumas Bosar v'Seifa b'Tumas Gavri. Should you say that the earlier part is Tumas Bosar and the latter part is Tumas Gavri? Amar Lei? Yes, he answers, I will say, yes, that is the case. Shame Tuma Kaporach. If Shame Tuma means the concept of Tuma is what is being used to prove the point. The concept of Tuma is an umbrella. It's an umbrella concept by definition means an umbrella term, and in that context, we are not being inconsistent when in the Reisha we're referring to Tumas Basar and the Seifa we're referring to Tumas Gavri. Another approach is Seifo Nami Batumas Bosar. The second installment is actually very consistent with the first installment that's talking also about Tumas Bosar. Umay Eino Noeg B'chol Hazvachim. What then does it mean that something about Tuma and the Tumas Bosar doesn't apply to all sacrifices? Deilu B'chol Hazvachim. When it comes to other sacrifices, the rule is as follows. Bein shenitmo chelev u'bosor kayom, u'bein shenitmo bosor v'chelev kayom zorek es hadam. Whether the chelev is the part of the korban of all korbanos that is put on the fire of the altar. The bosor is generally speaking that which people eat, except for a case of a korban ola. So, with regard to other zvachim, with regard to other korbanos, whether the meat is tomei and the chelev is around, or the chelev became tomei and the meat is tahor, is still around, zorek es hadam, that's enough reason for allowing the sprinkling of the blood. In your mind's eye, the sprinkling of the blood is done. Of course, that affords the atonement for the individual, and it's also a type of matir that once you sprinkle the blood, then you can either eat the meat, or it's then licensed for offering the portion for the mizbeach. So when it comes to other sacrifices, one or the other is reason enough to allow the zrikas adam. V'yilu b'pesach. However, when it comes to the korban pesach, the rule is different. Nitmo chelev u'basur kaim zorikas adam. If the chelev became tome and the meat is around and is not tome, it can be eaten, then that's good reason for allowing zrikas adam to take place. However, nitmo basur v'chelev kayam. If the basur, which is the central aspect of the korban pesach, the basur, which is that which is going to be eaten by the people who bring it, if it became tome and it can't be eaten, and all you have left is the chelev kayam, eino zorek esadam, then you won't do a blood sprinkling. So you see that when it comes to tumas basur, and that's why we dashed under the line nitmo basur, when it comes to tumas basur, there is an aspect of tumas basur that we can say is eino noheg bechol hazvochim. Let's continue. B'mai ukimto. So how have we set up the source so far? B'tumas basar. Eimo seifa. We continue. In a quote from the original source, Donin davar shelohuter michlolo, midavar shelohuter michlolo, in trying to determine what how we will deal with a group that's partially arelim and partially mulim, we will learn the rules of orla as from the rules of zman. And the source says, donin dovor shelohuter michlolo, we will determine the rules of orla, which has no exceptions, from zman, midavar, it's a pronoun referring to the issue of zman, the pigal idea. Also, shelo huter michlolo, which is something that has no heter, has no exception, there's never any permission or allowance or leniency with regard to pigol. V'alto chiyach tumo sha'arei huter michlolo. And we will not allow tuma to settle our issue, because as it is something different in so far it is hutar michlolo. Hutra michlolo means an exception of leniency is made, enabling it to depart from the rule. The klal is the rule, namely in the realm of tumah, there are exceptions to the rule. Bimai, well, what kind of tumah are you talking about? E lema, the Gemara continues at the top of Amid Beis. Betumas basar, if you're talking about where the meat of the korban became tamei, as we were saying up till now, we're talking about tumas basar. So if you're going to say in this third section of the source we're talking about tumas basar, hey cholutra, where do you find some type of exception made with regard to meat of a korban that became tamei? Elabshita, betumas gavri. So rather, to talk about tumah in terms of hutra mechola, we'd have to be talking about tumah that affected people. Take a look at the Rashi. Rashi is out of place. So the Rashi, if you want to find it, is found at the bottom of Omid Aleph. So Rashi there says, you could see at the bottom of Pshita Batumas Gavri, Rashi says, Shafilu Pesach Shelo Huter Liyochi Tomei Lishloch Pischoi Lazor Lishchoi Huter Letzibur Tomeim Lahavi pischein betuma im ruban tamein nimsa shehutra michlal isura. What is Rashi telling us? When you have an individual that's tamei, so there, he has no permission, no heter of sending his korban to the azora to be processed by someone else. Yet, if the tzibur, the community of people, the majority of the community of people are tamei, they bring their korbanos. Their korbanos are brought. So what do we see? We see huter michlolo. The klal was that if the owner is tomei, so his korban is not brought. If the tzibur is tomei, so their korban pesach, in fact, is brought. So the Gemara continues. So we're saying elapshita betumas gavri. Where do we find the heter, the leniency, we'll call the departure from the rule? But see, more in the case of the public, once again, the rule is that an owner of Korban Pesach Tomei, Korban not brought. Exception, if the public is Tomei, in other words, the collective of owners, the majority of whom are Tomei, it is brought. So at this point then, Tuma in the Seifa is what? Tumas Gavri. So, Kureisha betumas Boser, Seifa betumas Gavri? Should you accept such a thing? This quote, what we referred to before as inconsistency in the source. So the Gemara says, in. We are saying, Reisha Tumas Basu Sefer Tumas Gavri, as far as your problem of it being inconsistent, it's not a problem. Shame Tumas Koporach. The Brisa is using to prove its point the concept of Tumah. The concept of Tumah being either similar to Arla or possibly not similar as the source explained. The Iboy Esema, Kula Betumas Basar. Another approach is really the whole source is Tumas Basar. And then the question is, what about the last installment of the source, the third section that was quoted, Veicho Hutra? Where is there a Hutra Michlola by Tumas Basar? Betumas Pesach, in the case of the Korban Pesach, the Snan. The source says, HaPesach HaBo Betumah, like we just got finished describing, if the majority of the Tzibor are Tomei and they're going to bring their Korban Pesach, Nechal Betumah. And we dashed underline, this is a very dramatic halacha. It will be eaten, in a state of Tumah. So where the public is Tomei, where majority of the public is Tomei, and they're going to bring their Korban Pesachs, the meat that is Tomei, the Korban Pesach that became Tomei, even though we're talking about Tumas Basar, it will be eaten. The initial reason for bringing the Korban Pesach in the first place was for it to be eaten. Then that's different than other Korbanos, which are not brought with the primary purpose of being eaten. So at this point then, what we've done is we've explained the Tanaic source, quote, Samach Amud Beis, specifically the Tumah that was featured in the source, coming with the final answer was that the entire source can be understood as talking about Tumas Basar, and all of the Tumah explanations and descriptions that were presented in the source are applicable to Tumas Basar. The brackets close here, and we know from all of our exhaustive introductions that we're going back to Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda's point had been that without rehashing the entire sugya, Rav Chisda had made the point that when the ho'il concept, we're looking at potential as being a determining factor, as being actual, leads to astringency, then we will activate that form of logic or that form of analysis known as ho'il. Ho'il means since. Since indicating since in potential X, Y, and Z. So then we view the actual as X, Y, and Z. Rav Huna now challenges that. Mosiv Rav Huna braid Rav Yeshua. We have a Tanaic source, two parts. Aleph, HaPesach She'ovro Shnosoi. A Pesach, a Korban Pesach, is supposed to be a sacrifice brought of an animal within its first year of life. A Pesach she'ovro shnaso, it's more than a year old. V'shochtoi v'zmanoi lishmo, and you shechted it on the 14th of Nisan with a Pesach intention. In other words, you were taking this Korban, this animal, which is basically unfit to serve as a Korban Pesach, and you shechted it with the Pesach intention on the 14th of Nisan. V'chein, another case, ha-shochet achirim l'shem Pesach. Achirim is a reference to you shechted other sacrifices, and you specified that as a Pesach, and you did that bismano on the 14th of Nisan. So you shechted other sacrifices with the intention, with the kavon of it being a Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan. Rabbi Lezer posel, Rabbi Yeshua machshir. Here you have a machlokas tonim. Rabbi Lezer says it's unfit, and Rabbi Yeshua says it's acceptable. Now, taimo bismano. We are now going to draw an inference. The reason that Rabbi Lezer passled is because we're talking about a Shechita on the 14th of Nisan with a Pesach intention in mind of something that's unfit. So that's reason for passeling. That's reason enough for Rebbe Lezer to passel. Inference. Oh, Sheloi Bizmanoi. If you were talking about these examples, Pesach, Shavuot, Shnaso, and you're slaughtering it not on the 14th, on some other day. Or, you're taking another kind of korban and shechting it with a Pesach intention on some other day, other than the 14th. Kosher means even Reb Elazar would say that's okay. V'amai. Now, if the explanation we gave for Rav Chisda that holds Hayil L'chumra, if that's true, so why is what we just inferred accurate? Nema, could you not say Hayil Ubezmano Posel Shelo Bezmano Nami Posel? Since if you would have brought these korbanas, let's say you would have brought a korban ola or korban chatas on some other time, and you do it bismano l'shem Pesach. So since bismano posel, shelo bismano nami posel. So too at the other time, the non-14th of Nisan, the Pesach intention of these korbanas would also pasel. So, and that in fact is a stringency. So instead of inferring that, as we did where we squiggle underline two lines above, ha is the inference word, ha, shelo bismano kosher, why not apply the hoil analysis and say, since bismano it's puzzle according to Reb Elazar, even shelo bismano it should be puzzle. And by saying it should be puzzle, that obviously is a stringency. And yet we don't seem to say that. Omar Rav Popa. Shiny Hossam. That is different. The case of the Pesach that we just described is different. Basically, when it comes to the Machsheves Arelim and Rav Chisda saying that since they can become circumcised, it becomes categorized as Chavero Dumyo Didei, to make it such that it's a wrongful Machsheva when you had in mind zrika of arelim that were non minuyim. Again, we're repeating ourselves because of the potential for them to become nimolim. That Rav Chisda sticks by. That's called hoyil l'chumra. This particular discussion concerning the slaughtering of the korban of things with the korban Pesach intention is different, because here you have a scriptural basis for what was said. And take note of the fact that we have a long answer marking. So Rav Papa says shiny hosam the Omar Kro. The pasuk says ve'amartem zevach Pesach hu b'hav yoso, it as it is. What does that mean? The who is a limitation expression. Who, the Pesach is as it is. Loi hu l'shum achirim, v'lo achirim l'shmo. Meaning, do not slaughter the Pesach with the intention of it being another korban, nor do not shecht other sacrifices with the intention of them being a korban Pesach. Now, how does this rule manifest itself? Bizmanoi on the 14th of Nisan, Shehu Posel L'Shum Achirim, if you shecht a Korban Pesach and have in mind some other Korban, it is Posel. That's known as the rule says that a Pesach Habor Shelo L'Shmo, just like a Korban Chatas, is Posel. That's a case of Shelo L'Shmo. You're bringing it with an intention other than its Pesach identity. So that is true on the 14th of Nisan, where the Pesach is posel l'shum achirim. Achirim psulim l'shmo. Therefore, shechting other sacrifices with a Pesach intention renders the sacrifice unfit. Sheloi bezmano, however, outside the 14th of Nisan, shehu kosher l'shum achirim, outside the 14th of Nisan, the Korban Pesach is actually to be slaughtered as with having in mind a Shlomim, which is a different Korban. So it the Korban Pesach is kosher l'shum achirim, and that's shelo bezmano. Achirim, ksherim, l'shmo. Therefore, shechting other Korbanos with a Pesach intention is also kosher. It's also okay. So as far as Rav Chisda's basic approach as Rav Ashi had presented it, when activating hoyle results in a chumrah, we will use the hoyle analysis. As far as this last Tanaic source that Rav Una Brei Rav Shua had quoted, this source and the rules therein are governed by a pasuk, and therefore, and a pasuk with a limitation, so that even though in this case the we're not applying hoyle to chumrah, that's because the pasuk tells me how to rule. As you can see, we have a slash mark, which indicates that which follows is a new trend of thought. The Gemara, before it gets to the, we'll call it the main point, the point that's, let's say, relevant to our discussion, has a quite a few lines of quotes, so we'll call this introductory information. It's kind of you'll see it's a story here that eventually enables us to lead up to the question. Now, in order to demonstrate this structural aspect of the Gemara, we are using brackets, but these brackets are not for skipping purposes, but rather to show that this is all, we'll call it, introductory text before we get to that which is relevant to Korban Pesach. So if you skip momentarily, you see there's a base in parentheses, that's the Bach changes the text to Havikoshok of Oziel. In other words, they, in the story, we'll see later, it's Rav Simloi and Rav Yochanan, they were walking along, and Omalei, Rav Simloi says, Rebbe, he turns to Rav Yochanan and says, Ma bein lishmo v'shelo lishmo, Le'ochlov v'shelo le'ochlov. What's the difference between a mixed intention when it comes to shechting a Korban Pesach of lishmo v'shelo lishmo versus the case of le'ochlov v'shelo le'ochlov, where there the mixed intention is okay, the Korban is still kosher. So that is, at that point we tie into our Korban Pesach discussion. Let's now pick up the Gemara from the slash mark. Rav Simloi also lekamei to Rav Yochanan. Rav Simloi came to Rav Yochanan. Amar lei. Rav Simloi requested nisni limor sefer yuchsin. Kindly teach me what's called in the Gemara sefer yuchsin. This is a reference to a Tanaic source that explains or elaborates upon the Book of Chronicles that we call Divrei Hayomim that appears in the Tanakh. So you have the scriptures referred to as Divrei Hayomim, and called the oral Torah that accompanies it is called Sefer Yuchsin. The term Yuchsin is a term that is associated with genealogy, and for those of you who are familiar with the Book of Chronicles, with Divrei Hayomim, in fact, it is an extensive presentation of what would on the surface appear to be listings of genealogy. However, for those who are familiar with a couple references in the Shas itself, Divrei Hayomim is far deeper than the mere presentation of names and family lineage as appears when you're reading the Psukim on their own. So this work of Sefer Yuchsin contains quite a bit of elaboration on the psukim. I'm sure that it goes way beyond the simple translation of the verses. So Rav Simloi was interested in learning that part of Torah. Amalei, so Rav Yochanan, you'll see that Rav Yochanan tries to avoid getting involved with this, and he says to Rav Yochanan, he says, Mehechan, where are you from? Amalei mi Lud, I'm from the town of Lud. Vehechan moisvoch, and where do you dwell? What's your dwelling? In other words, he apparently asks him, where were you born, and where do you live? So he answers, Ben Nahardo, I live in Nahardo. Amalei, Rav Yochanan says, Ein Ein shoinin lo leludim v'lo lenardoim. We don't teach this Sefer Yuchsin to people who are from Lud, nor to people from Nahardo. V'kol shekein da'at mi Lud u'mosvot lenardoim. Certainly not to you. You have two strikes against you. From Lud and you live in Nahardo. Rav Simloi was relentless. Kafye v'artzi. Kafye would mean, loosely translated, he prevailed, and Artzi and Rav Yochanan consented. Omale, Nisne b'shloshi yachi. Rav Simloi says, I'll give you 3 months. You know, teach it to me in 3 months. Well, boy, does this get a reaction out of Rav Yochanan. Shokal kola, Rav Yochanan took a kola. Kola is a clod of dirt. Posak bay and threw it at Rav Simloi. Omar lay, and Rav Yochanan says, it sounds a little disrespectful, but it's like we would say amongst commoners to say, are you out of your mind? He says, Uma Bruria Divisu de Rabbi Meir, Barte de Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion. Here we have an amazing reference to what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to demonstrate is the maximum genius, if you will. A person of greatest absorption abilities, and he makes reference to a woman. For all of those who think that somehow the rabbis view women with some kind of a second-rate status, they're severely mistaken. Because if anything, the archetype of or the paradigm of genius is in fact a woman. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Uma Bruria, mind you, Bruria, Devisu, the wife of Rabbi Meir, Barte, the daughter of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, the Sanya, look at her abilities. She was able to learn Tlas Meo Shmaitza Bayoima de Shusa 300 halochas, 300 shmaitzas, teachings, halocha teachings on a Yoma de Shusa. On a wintry day, from 300 different rabbanon, migimul me'al rabvasa. You might find in certain commentaries they'll say that these numbers are exaggerated numbers. That doesn't make one bit of difference to us. But you see, she is being presented as the greatest mind. And Ba'afilu Hochi lo yotzusa yedei choivosa betlas shonin. She was not able to finish or to learn the Sefer Yochanan in 3 years. V'yadamrez betlasa yarchi, and you're saying teach it to me in 3 months? Well, as you can see, the brackets ends over here. I don't know what Rav Simloi's reaction was after hearing that, but Havakov Shokov, also they were walking along. Amale, Rav Simloi says, Rebbe, Ma Bain, Lishmo Vishalo Lishmo, what is different about the case of a person who has a mixed mindset, whereby he shechs the korban with having in mind it being a korban pesach and mixing in some other korban in his mind, and we say that the korban pesach is rendered unfit because of that, as opposed to la'uchlov shalo'uchlov, where a person has in mind a group of people, part of some of whom are capable of eating, and others who are maybe zakenim or choylim, who are incapable of eating, and having that mixed mindset doesn't ruin the korban. Omar Lay, you'll notice that we have a house marking here around essentially Rabbi Yochanan, in contrast to that a few number of lines later, Rav Ashi, and on the side, we should take note of our Nosei Mivne heading. We've written it as follows: Taroivis Machshavois, Aleph, Lishmov Shaloshmo, Posel, Beis, Laochlov Shaloochlov, Kosher, that we already discussed. Arba Havdalin, there are 4 Havdalin Beinehim, Lasbir Loma Ze Posel, Veze Kosher, because of 4 differences. We will conclude that's the reason for Lishmo Lishmo being Pusul and Ochav Shalochav being Kosher. And as far as the house marking, Rabbi Yochanan Sover Diesh Arba Hevdalim, Rav Ashi Sover Shevdalim 1 and 2 Chada Milsi. And we'll go through Rav Ashi, he will tell us that what we thought were differences number 1 and 2 are really one in the same. So now, Rav Yochanan responds, Omalei, you want to know what the difference between Lishmo Shol Lishmo versus Lochlov Shol Lochlov is? So he says, Hayil Vitzuber Abonanat, since you are a Talmud Chocham, Ta V'Emoloch. Also, an interesting introduction. I only can raise the question. I can't answer it right now, but he says, since you are a Talmud Chacham, I'll tell you the difference. Does that leave room to suggest that if he wasn't a Talmud Chacham, he wouldn't tell him the difference? Whatever the case is, an interesting introduction. It could be that it's also a type of compensation for what he had, how Rabbi Yochanan had reacted to Rav Simloi just before, indicating how in the world can you even think to learn Sefer Yochsin in 3 months? Nevertheless, you are a Talmud Chacham. And he says, since you are that, I will tell you the difference. And we have numbered the beginning points of each difference. Number one, Lishmo v'shalo shmo, psulo begufo. L'ochlov shalo l'ochlov, ein psulo begufo. In the case of changing the identity of the korban in your mind, that's a machshava concerning the korban itself, as opposed to the machshava of who is going to eat the korban. That's a bit more removed. It's not called a psulo begufo. It's not an inherent deficiency. So therefore, we can treat that more lightly. Number two, lishmo v'shalo shmo, ef shelavar isuro. Rashi has two pshatim on that. The first pshat is that when you shech the korban pesach and you mix the intention lishmo, you can't identify which part of the korban, which part of the meat was the recipient of the lishmo intention, and which part of the korban was not. However, li'oichlov v'shelo la'ochlov, efshir levarer isuro. When it comes to the ones who are capable of eating and the ones who are incapable of eating, so we can say which is which. Number three, lishmoi v'shelo lishmo, yeshno ba'arba avodos. The issue of having proper intention vis-a-vis identity of korban, that issue of doing it lishmo, or conversely doing it shelo lishmo, has bearing on each one of the four avodos: shchita, kabbalah, kabbalah sadam, hoilocha, and zrika. However, le'ochlo v'shelo le'ochlo v'enu ba'arba avodos, the issue of having in mind the people who are unfit to eating, the zoke and the chola, that doesn't have ramifications during all four avodas. It's we say we have a rule, ein machsheves oichlin bezrika. As Rashi says, ein obar bavodos, the ein machsheves oichlin bezrika. By zrika, if you are, let's say, do zrika sadam with the intention of a zalkein or choyla receiving kapora, receiving his, we'll say, his benefit, it doesn't ruin the korban. Number four, lishmo v'shelo lishmo yeshno b'tzibur kibiyochid. The issue of proper identity of korban in mind has bearing on a public sacrifice as well as a private sacrifice. Li'oichlo v'shelo l'ochlov eino b'tzibur kibiyochid. The concept of a machsheves oichlim applies only to the korban pesach. It doesn't apply to all korbanos, and certainly not to korban sibur. Rav Ashi Omar, psulo begufo v'ef shelavar isuro chado milsahi. These two elements are really one and the same. Dematam Omar psulo begufo. Why is it that you say that a shelo lishmo constitutes an inherent deficiency? Mishum di'ef shelavar isuro, because you can't clarify which part of the korban is the victim, so to speak, of the shelo lishmo, because of your inability to mevarer isuro, so therefore it's classified as psula begufo, an inherent problem. Not so in the case of le'ochlov v'shelo le'ochlov, where you can be mevarer isuro, as Rashi says. You can say, well, this part of the korban is for the people who are capable of eating, and this other part of the korban is for those who are not capable of eating. We continue in the Gemara. Once again, you see a bracketed section, and we note on the side that Sograim Eilu Einom L'Shem Dilug, These are not for skipping purposes. Elo bo l'tachem keta shechozeres lidim sefer yuchsin sheuz kliel. Just these couple lines go back to the topic of the sefer yuchsin that was mentioned earlier. After the brackets, again we return to the issue of machshavas, double or dual machshavas, dual mindsets in the processing of the korban. But that having been said, let's continue with the bracketed section. Omar Rami bar Rav Yuda, Omar Rav. Rami says in the name of Rav that miyoyim she nignaz sefer yuchsin, the day nignaz literally means it was buried or hidden, but Rashi says forgotten. So from the day that the sefer yuchsin, the brais on divrei yomim, was forgotten, toshash koychon shel chachomim v'kea mor einehem. Rashi says toshash koychon. The secrets or the reasons, the explanations of the Torah that were contained in this book, in this work, are now forgotten. In other words, we have in front of us the scriptures, Divrei Hayomim, but the real explanation behind them is not known anymore. That's Toshash Koychon. Literally, their strength became weakened, but as Rashi says, the reasons or the explanations of those psukim are now lost. And their Keo Moreneim, and their eyesight has become dimmed. Omar Marzutra, Bein Etzel Le'etzel, this is a reference to two psukim. Rashi tells you at the second line from the bottom, Be'etzel Etzel Shnei Mikros, hein, there are two psukim, U'parsha G'dola Be'neim, and there's a long section of verses between the two, and Rashi quotes the psukim, U'le'etzel Shisha Bonim, that's a reference to one pasuk, V'kochoshev Ozel Abonim, and if, as you learn, you open up the Sefer Divrei Yomim, the Book of Chronicles, you'll see the descendants of Etzel and his sons. The Sefer the Parshosa, and the end of that section reads Ela et Bnei Etzel. These are the sons of Etzel. So between the beginning and the end of that section, the Gemara says, we're back in the Gemara, Ta'ino Arba Mea Gamli Dedrosha. First, the literal translation is Ta'ino means there was the burden, 400 camels of cargo, we'll say, of drushes. In other words, if you were to write out the drushes the oral tradition regarding those psukim, if you would write them out on paper, on parchment, it would take 400 camel loads to carry all of that information. So one can just imagine there's a vast amount of commentary that is lost, and this is a reference to just one section of the Book of Chronicles. So one can just imagine why it in fact took Bruria, this mastermind, 3 years to cover the material. Tanya. We have a Tanaic source. Acherim Oimrim. Hiktim Mulim La'Reilim. If in the case of we'll call the dual mindset, you had in mind the circumcised before you had in mind the uncircumcised, kosher, the korban is okay. However, areilim lemulim pusel. If you switch the order around, so then the korban pesach is rendered unfit. So that if you slaughtered the korban pesach having in mind areilim and then mulim, it's unfit. So the obvious question is, why the difference? This discussion will keep the Gemara occupied a good way down Samach Gimel Amud Aleph till the Mishnah. You'll notice on the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph a series of diamonds that begins there, and in our Nosei Mivneh note, the diamonds represent Shalosh Nisyonos Lahavin Habraisa Shel Achirim, three attempts to understand this brisa that's brought in the name of Achirim, who Rebbe Meir. It's important to note that Achirim is a code name for Rebbe Meir. Lama mechalek bein, why is a distinction made between hikte mulim larelim de kosher, where you had mulim placed before arelim, it's okay, lehikte arelim mulim de pasul. The Gemara starts the question, and we've called this a long question. You can see it takes you down a few lines down the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. My shno mulim larelim de kosher. What is unique about mulim being placed first, that the korban is okay, the kula orla bo'inon v'leko, that in order to pasul the korban, it would become pasul only if it was exclusively orla. Here you mixed orla. Orla is the uncircumcised together with the mulim. Well, arelim l'mulim nami kula orla bo'inon v'leko, in the case where you placed arelim first followed by mulim, why don't you say that the mulim undoes the arelim and you don't have a complete unit of arelim thought? It's a mixed thought. And as we said, even though we're being a bit repetitious, in order for the korban to become unfit, it's only when your machshava was exclusively on arelim. It's not the case in either one of these examples. So why in one case is it kosher, in the other case not? So lema, should we say? Now, when you see the term lema, it's something that it ultimately will be rejected in 98% of the cases in Shas. This is a term indicating something that's only presented as a suggestion, knowing there's a weakness to it. So should we say that Kosavri Achirim, that the Achirim have the following opinion? And in the next couple lines of Gemara, truth be told, there's a reference to some very elaborate sugyos of Shas. So a real understanding of this, even an accurate understanding, is dependent on a great deal of introduction. We're going to try the terse, abbreviated approach, and hopefully we'll come out with a decent pshat. So should we say that the Achirim hold as follows? Eino l'shchita elo besof. Shchita, the act of slaughtering, involves moving the knife across the neck of an animal, and in the case of animals, there are two simonim, as they refer to two, in this case, we'll say two organs, two pipes, the trachea and the esophagus. The majority of each one must be severed in the movement of the knife in order to constitute a proper shchita. In terms of establishing at what point, and here we have something that's a bit abstract, but it's a halachic concept. Physically, we understand the slicing of the two tubes is the slaughtering. However, the halachic status of shchita, at what point is that established? So there are two schools of thought on that. One says, yeshno l'shchita metchila v'yatsof, that the entire time that the knife is cutting those tubes, the entire movement of the knife over the tubes from the very beginning already is classified as an act of shchita. Again, the legal status, it's a halachic concept, not the practical. Practically speaking, of course the shchita starts when you start cutting the tubes, but the halachic status of something being considered shchita, according to Yeshna L'shimit V'yosof, means from the beginning to the end. There's another approach that says Shchita is established only at the end. Eino L'shchita B'sof. And that's, in effect, a moment in time. It's one instant. It's at the point that you complete. So the Shitas Acherim, in order to establish, to build up what they hold, it seems that they're saying that Eino L'shchita Olo B'sof, Uchid Rava, and we have to accept Rava's explanation in another sugya, Dioma Rava, Adayin hi machloikis. This is a very terse reference to a sugya that we've seen already a couple of times in the past. There's a machloikis tanoim between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi regarding the issue of Tfois Loshen Rishon or Af Bigmar Dvorov Odom Nitpas. According to Rava, the machloikas applies even in a case where someone says at the outset, he says, I have in mind chatsi, one thought, chatsi another thought. The standard, or the common example of the machloikis tanoim, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, is in the case of tumura, where a person attempts to replicate, and this is forbidden to do, but the Torah mentions the replication of sanctity from sanctified animals onto a common, mundane, chulin animal. And if a person has, let us say, he has in front of him a korban ola and a korban chatos, and he has a third chulin animal, and he says, I want this chulin animal to be tmuras ola, tmuras chatos, according to Rebbe Meir, tfos loshon rishon. And that would mean that the replication establishes the chulin animal as being an ola and not anything to do with the chatos, even though he mentioned chatos. Rabbi Yossi says, af bigmar dvar voda mitpas, indicating that the chulin animal will have a dual identity. We're being a bit superficial now. There's more than that to the topic. However, we are really interested in Shitas Rabbi Meir, who is the Achirim, as we mentioned before. So if a person says Tmuras Ola, Tmuras Chatos, we say that only the first Tfos Loshon Rishon, only Ola, is going to take effect. Let us say, at the outset, he says, I want this animal, the chulin animal, to be chatsi olo chatsi chatos. In other words, there's no room for confusion, like in the case of tmuras olo, tmuras chatos. There, Rabbi Meir says, tfos loshon rishon, because he might have thought that he could change his mind in the middle. After saying Ola, he changes his mind to wanting it to be a Chatos, and we come along and say, you can't change your mind in the middle. What about a statement that clearly demonstrate no change of mind, where he says, I want this chulin animal to be Chatsi Ola Chatsi Chatos, half Ola, half Chatos. According to Rava, Rabbi Meir will maintain his position that it becomes just Ola. That once you declare it to be Chatsi Ola, that's the first thing that came out of your mouth, the Ola sanctity spreads throughout the whole animal and locks out it becoming a Chatos whatsoever. So we're building up some ideas right now. First idea we mentioned, Eino l'shchita b'sof. That means that shchita is established, and in this case, the machshava concerning shchita is at one moment. And Rava says that shitas Rabbi Meir holds tfos loshon rishon, even where you have a clearly stated dual machshava. Namely, even in a case where it's clear to us that you're not changing your mind, but you want to have both elements in mind, Ola and Chatos in the Tmura example. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir will tell you Tfos Loshon Rishon. And if he said Chatsi Ola followed by Chatsi Chatos, the Ola sanctity spreads throughout the whole animal. And therefore, Shitas Rabbi Meir would be, it remains a Tmuras Ola. Just like he said in the case of someone who had dedicated or declared Tmuras Ola, Tmuras Chatos. With all of that as background, we now apply this to the case of the Mulim Arelim story, Hilkach. Hikdim Mulim La'arelim, which we said is kosher, and we're talking Shitas Acherim, which is Rebbe Meir. And Rabbi Meir holds Tfos Loshon Rishon. Mulim Chayli Arelim Lo Chayli. The Mulim, the circumcised, which is a proper thought, Chayli, it takes effect. The Arelim, machshava doesn't take effect. Hikdim areilim lemulim. If he mentioned areilim first, and the result achirim said is puzzle, areilim chayli, mulim lo chayli. The areilim machshava takes hold, and the mulim machshava is simply locked out. It can't take hold. So there's no mixture. So just to repeat ourselves, in the case of hikdim mulim la reilim, it becomes totally mulim because of what we said, that achirim, which is Rabbi Meir, tfos loshon rishon, even in a case like this, where he was makdim areilim mulim, it becomes exclusively areilim because of tfos loshon rishon. Omar Rabba loy. Rabba rejects this analysis. Don't worry, we preface it with a lame or kosavi at the beginning. Rabbi says, no, we're not going to accept that analysis. Lo'olam kosavi achirim yeshno l'shchita mitchilo v'yatsof. The shchita process isn't determined at one moment, and that like only one momentary thought has time to take effect, as we just tried to explain. But rather, the shchita is established from beginning to end. That the entire time that you're moving the knife along the simonim, that is considered halachically shchita. The hocha b'maya skinon. And here that we say, if you're makdim areilim lemulim puzzle, why is that the case? Now, let's just go over this again. If you say, yeshtem l'shchito mitchilev atzof, that would mean there's time for both machshavas to take place, for the areilim and the mulim, and you would think that you have a mixed group, and in a mixed group, that should be okay. It's not like lishmo v'shelo lishmo. So why does the order make a difference? So the Gemara explains, v'hocha v'mayaskinon, the case that was makdim areilim, he put areilim first, kigon shegomar b'liboy l'travayu. He intended in his heart, inside, he had a specific intention, a kavona, for both, bein l'mulim, bein l'areilim. Now, if he would... And if that would be the end of the story, it's a mixed intention of oichlim sholo oichlim, and that's okay. We've learned in the past that as long as you have partial eaters, partial people are capable of eating, the korban pesach is okay. However, what happened here? He intended for both. V'hotzi b'fiv le'areilim. V'lo hispik lomar le'mulim. He pronounced areilim. He didn't have a chance to say lemulim like his intention was, ad shenigmar shchita areilim. Until, what happened? He first finished shchita with all that had come out of his lips was areilim. At that point, he finished the shchita. So there was no more time, so to speak, for the mulim machshava to enter the picture while he was still involved with the shchita to serve as a counterbalance to the areilim problematic machshava. So what do we have here? We've dashed underlined key phrases. Gomar Belibo, intention was great. He had great intention at the outset. Physically or practically speaking, something wrong came out. And according to the Achirim, which was Rebbe Meir, the Rebbe Meir Sofar, Ubaho Pligi means Rebbe Meir versus those that argue with him. And the Rebbe Meir Sofar, Lo Bo'inon Piv V'Liboy Shovim. Now here, it's hard to translate this literally. The literal is, we don't require mouth and intent to be consistent, to be one and the same. Which, practically speaking, means since... the intention is of no concern. We're left only with Piv. We're left only with what he actually said. Rashi points out in the wide lines under the Gemara text, the medium sized lines. He says, "Lo bo'ino piv livo shoven the haloch achar piv, and follow that which he says." And being that that's the case, where he said first areilim, that's all that matters then, because we follow what he said. V'rabbonon savri bo'inon piv v'liboy shavim. The Rabbonon disagree, and if you don't have consistency between P and Libo, so what he said is not going to settle, is not going to determine the matter. And since that which he said, when it's not consistent with that which he thought, and all he said was Arelim, it's not going to be considered a Shechita only for Arelim. There's a point that we've emphasized with our markings in the Rashi, the squiggle underlined expression that's worth noting. It's a general point, and he says, "Kol machshava de kochim." When you see the term machshava, is we talk about he had a machshava of lo lishmo, we had a machshava of lishmo, or all those, the term machshava or intent, that what you learn when you're seeing kochim topics related to sacrifices, motzi befivhu, it's a reference to something that he says explicitly. So the term machshava doesn't mean just something he's thinking inside his head. In this particular case, the gomar belibo is in fact something that he didn't actually say. He had an intention, but what came out of his mouth was something else. We continue in the Gemara. Question. Because Sofa Rabbi Meir lo boin and pivali boi shoven. Is that really so that Rabbi Meir doesn't insist on this consistency, and that all that would matter is what he says? We have a Stam Mishnah. It's a Mishnah without a name, and that is assumed to be Rabbi Meir. It says as follows: Hamiskavein lomar truma v'yomar meiser. A person is tithing as produce, and he had an intention to declare some produce as truma, and what came out of his mouth was meiser. Meiser v'yomar truma, the other way around. Oy she'eni nichnas l'bayezeh v'yomar lozeh. It's a person is vowing, and he says, "I'm not going to go into a particular house." He intended to say house A, and what came out of his mouth was house B. Or he says, She'eini ne'ene lozeh, v'yom lozeh. He is not going to provide benefit to Mr. A, and he said, Mr. B. Loi omar klum, ad shu piv v'libo shoven. Well, here it says, Lo omar klum, which we dashed underline. What he said is of no significance, because there was this lack of consistency of parallel between what he said and what he intended. Well, so what do we see? Clear statement of Rebbe Meir. This is a Rebbe Meir source that says that we require pivali bo shoven. If that's the case, then going back to the achirim omrim hiktim mulim larelim is kosher and arelim lemulim is puzzle, how do you explain the source? Elo Omar Abaye, a third attempt to explain. Reisha the Omar, in the case of the Reisha, where we said Hiktim Mulim La'arelim Kosher, it's the following: Simen Rishon Lemulim, the Simen Sheni Af La'arelim. His expressed intention was, he said, I'm cutting the first Simen, trachea and esophagus, so the first one. For the mulim, and the second one even for the arelim. The besimin sheni nami psichi be mulim. In cutting the second organ, he was including mulim in that as well. In other words, there's mulim present in that second organ. What was his language? What did he say? He says, "I'm slaughtering the second one even for arelim." In other words, arelim included in the mulim that he mentioned at the outset. So that as far as this shechita is concerned, there's the mulim intention throughout the entire shechita, both simonim. Seifa, the seifa of the achirim source that said where is makdim arelim mulim, it's posel, it's because of the following: Diomar simon rishon la'arelim, simon sheni lemulim. The besimon rishon halo psichi be mulim. Psichi means mixed in. In this case, the first simen, there was no there was no reference, there was no mixing in of mulim whatsoever. There is a starred note in the Rashi, Hilkoch ki hiktim areilim lemulim nigmar simen rishon bareilim. The first simen was ruined because he had exclusive areilim machshava in simen rishon. Rabbi Meir l'tame. Rabbi Meir is the achirim. Rabbi Meir here in saying these halachas is Rabbi Meir consistent with what he said, what he has said elsewhere. Yomar mefaglin b'chatzi matir. When one brings a meal offering, there is a handful of flour and a handful of lavona. Lavona is a spice that is brought together with the mincha. After burning the lavona and the kometz, the handful of the flour on the fire, then one can eat the shirayim, the balance, the rest of the baked goods that constitutes the mincha is available for the kohanim to eat. In order to allow the eating of the shirayim, we have two matirs, two elements that provide allowance, provide permission. That's called a matir. What are the two elements? The kometz and the lavona. Let us say that a person has a wrongful mindset when offering just one of the two matirs. In other words, he takes the handful of flour and puts it on the fire with the intention of eating the shirayim the next day, which is outside the time allotment. Rabbi Meir says, "Mefaglin b'chatzi matir." That establishes pigul, even though you didn't have the pigul intention regarding the lavona as well. Oh. So you see this, when we have two matirs, in the case of slaughtering an animal, there are also two matirs. There's the esophagus and the trachea. And by ruining one of them, that is in effect going to ruin the entire korban. And that's why hiktim areilim lemulim, where you did the first simen with an areilim mindset, exclusively areilim, that's it, the korban is ruined because of Rabbi Meir's consistent reason of mefaglin b'chatzi matir. Now, the Rabbanan, on the other hand, who disagree, the Rabbanan who said it doesn't matter if you're makdin mulim areilim or areilim mulim, it's kosher either way. Rabbanan tamayu diamri ein mefaglin b'chatzi matir. You do not establish pigul as was the case in our mincha analogy, and in the case of shchita, you don't create psul unless the psul is in both simonim. And that's called Ein Mefaglin B'chatzi Matir. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.